Greetings, everyone. My name is William Porter. Welcome to this edition of Storytelling Time. This podcast is sponsored by Every.Black Entrepreneurs Podcasting Network. Our foundation scripture comes from 1 Corinthians chapter 6 and verse 19. Or do you know that your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit within you, whom you have from God? You are not your own. The Storytelling Time podcast this week is a continuation of the story that was recited last week. The reading comes from the chapter 3 of the book, Miracles in the Lives of Ordinary People. This week, the title of the podcast is The Eclipse. We're continuing to promote the writing efforts of those accepting the challenge of writing a book by June of this year. Last week, I presented the first two steps of an internet article, 10 Ridiculously Simple Steps for Writing a Book. Those two steps are deciding what you want to write about and 2, setting a daily word count. This week, I want to focus on the third and fourth steps in the article. The third step is to work on your book every day. And that doesn't have to be a very long period of time. Maybe just a few minutes each day is enough to generate quite a bit of written material for you to review and assess. And it's very important to select a time when it is convenient for you to write. For me, early in the morning, before I get out of bed, is a good time to really focus on what I want to write about. The fourth step is to write in the same place every day. It doesn't matter whether it's at a desk, at a certain place in a restaurant, or on the kitchen table. Just keep it consistent every day. Setting not only the time you're going to write, but also the place where you're going to write will eliminate you having to think about these decisions and more time you can spend in thinking about what you're going to write about. Now let's get on with today's story. By the time Earl got to high school, he had experiences that few older adults ever had. The loss of his parents' home by fire, and the near loss of his life because of it. Nevertheless, Earl did well in high school by being a model student. His science teacher, Mr. Totler, encouraged him to enter that field when he got to college. Earl excelled in science and took a special liking to geography. Mr. Totler, who happened to teach that subject, said to him after class once, "Earl, you'll become a geography teacher one day, and you'll teach what you've learned in my class." And what Earl learned about during a semester study in this subject back in high school were things like weather and climate, winter and summer solstice, and astronomical eclipses. Mr. Totler encouraged him to come back to Douglas High and tell him about his studies in college and his career path. He was sure that Earl would choose to become a scientist and probably specialize in geography. Earl eventually graduated from high school and, although having limited resources, did not allow it to limit his performance in school. His teachers saw more than just a potential in Earl. He was a leader and an extremely gifted student. Earl became the senior class president and was the lead trumpet player in the marching band. While he was a good student, especially in science, his natural gift was that he appreciated music a whole lot. In addition to playing the trumpet, Earl was an adept pianist. He went to various churches in the community where he played for different choirs. When Earl graduated from high school, he surprised everyone by enlisting in the army. He had a strong desire to see the world and felt the best way to do it would be to join the military. Soon after enlisting, he found that this branch of the armed forces was not for him. Earl still had a desire to serve his country, so he left the army at that point and promptly enlisted into the Air Force, which was more to his liking. Earl especially liked the exotic places where he was stationed in his new military affiliation. One of his favorite areas of deployment was Puerto Rico. It was there where he was initially introduced to Spanish. Earl stayed there the longest and became immersed into the local culture of the country, including the language. He was intrigued by the Spanish spoken by the locals and found that he could easily catch on to what the natives were saying and soon became quite proficient in communicating with them on a very basic level. Earl was stationed in Puerto Rico for 2 years before being transferred to an Air Force base in Oregon. He stayed there 2 more years, then left the military altogether. When Earl ended his term of service, he decided to attend college to obtain more formal education in Spanish. This was the first time he was away from home after high school while not being in the military. Oregon certainly was a new experience for him. As a transition to civilian life, Earl had a short stay at the Port Orford Air Station on the coast of southern Oregon. Port Orford was a small community that catered to a year-round tourist population. It was early summer and he planned to attend Southern Oregon College in the fall. The college was in Ashland, about an hour's drive inland from where the base was on the coast. He relocated to Ashland in anticipation of continuing his study of the Spanish language. Let's take a break, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. Earl had known about the total solar eclipse that would affect the United States later in the summer, but little did he realize that coastal Oregon would initiate the event for all of the country, at least not until recently. He was so busy working on the transfer from military housing in Port Orford to an apartment in Ashland that he put little effort in keeping up with it in the news. But all of a sudden, the eclipse was soon to come, and everybody in town seemed to be talking about it. After all, it was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to witness a rare natural event involving the sun, the moon, and the earth. The suddenness of daytime turning into night in a matter of only a few minutes grabbed most people's attention. Earl realized that the big event was only days away, and he was eager to experience it. He wanted to relive some of the things that were taught to him about it in Mr. Totler's geography class back in high school. He remembered his former teacher saying that during this event, the moon moves between the earth and the sun, casting a huge shadow on the earth. Earl also remembered Mr. Totler saying, at some locations during the time of a total eclipse, there is what is called a period of totality, the time where the moon casts its shadow on the earth, where darkness will suddenly arrive in the midst of daylight, as though it was nighttime. During the time of totality, Earl remembered Mr. Totler as saying, the whole area of the sun appears to be covered at these locations within the shadow, as the moon moves directly between the earth and the sun. Earl continued to reminisce about what Mr. Totler taught. He remembered his teacher saying, When viewed from the Earth at this time, the Sun appears to be totally covered by the Moon. At that time, the entire region within the shadow becomes darker and darker until the whole area on the Earth within that shadow appears as nighttime. Mr. Toddler had explained that during this period, for about 2 or 3 minutes, the Sun could be viewed directly with the naked eye without any visual damage. That's because the entire light of the Sun becomes covered by the Moon during totality, except for reflected light surrounding the Sun because of the atmosphere, an occurrence known as the solar corona, as it was described by Mr. Toddler. Earl continued to remember Mr. Toddler's words as though it was only yesterday. He would say, "Beyond the period of totality, darkness remains because of the lingering effect of the Moon's shadow. But now, more of the Sun's light gradually returns. At this time, looking directly at the Sun could cause permanent eye damage because the Sun's light slowly reemerges as the Moon passes from being directly between the Sun and the Earth. During this time, Mr. Toddler would recommend that protective eyeglasses be worn when looking directly at the Sun when it is only partially covered." Now that actual event had arrived. Totality would occur in Port Orford at 2:45 local time, and Earl was looking forward to the experience. Having already relocated from the Air Force Base in Port Orford to Ashland, where he got his apartment weeks earlier, Earl decided to take the trip back to Port Orford to experience the eclipse on the Oregon coast. At that location, he would be among the first to view the effect of this huge shadow that the Moon cast on the Earth. According to the experts charting the event, the effects of the total eclipse would track its way across the country, beginning in Oregon at Port Orford and exiting on the Atlantic coast in South Carolina. The only thing preventing this occurrence would be the weather. Extremely cloudy conditions would lessen the visual effect of the eclipse. Fortunately, clear conditions were forecast during the period of this celestial wonder. At any rate, Sunday would be a day of rest for Earl, as he had planned the hour-long trip to the coast the next day and prepare for the experience of the eclipse. When Monday came around, he was filled with anticipation for the big event that would begin to happen the next day on Tuesday, shortly after 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Let's take another break, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. Earl planned to leave Ashland for the coast early Monday morning. After breakfast, he was ready to make the trip to Port Orford and check into the hotel that he had already reserved. Although the traffic was heavy, the trip was short since the hotel was on the same road as his apartment back in Ashland. That evening, the hotel hosted an affair that was called a pre-eclipse party. Earl arrived at the hotel early, at about noontime. When he got there, the buzz all around was about this grand celestial event that was about to take place. As it was a clear, cloudless day, Earl said to himself, "It's so bright now, but tomorrow about this time, it will appear like what it'll be like tonight. Can you imagine nighttime in the middle of a sunny day?" he asked himself. Then he continued to ponder. "Now, how weird is that going to be?" he asked himself a second question. Earl took a mid-afternoon nap before having an early dinner at 4 o'clock. Now, the expectation and anticipation of the celestial event was growing stronger by the minute. About 2 hours later, hotel guests began to gather in the lobby for that pre-eclipse party. The people who came there were excited and talked about what they were about to experience. It was a very festive environment as everyone discussed the upcoming celestial event. Earl remained in the lobby for about an hour before deciding to call it a night. Eventually, Earl made it back to his living quarters. It had been a long day. After the party, Earl went to his room to relax a bit, looking at a little TV. All that was on the tube was news about the upcoming event in the heavens.
Parts of North America, the sun went out today. For a little under 3 minutes, the forces of darkness ruled in daylight with a great swath of shadow up to 190 miles wide, cut across the continent from the coast of Oregon to Greenland.
So just before bed, Earl took one last check of the weather forecast for the day of the event. He saw that the forecast called for clear skies, perfect conditions to view the eclipse. All he could do now was wait, like all the others there at the hotel, for the experience of a lifetime. Eventually, he went to bed and quickly fell asleep. When he awoke, he saw that the time on the clock was 5:02. Darkness had not yet transitioned into the morning light of the rising sun. While laying there in bed, Earl contemplated the spectacular sight of a full eclipse in only about 9 hours from that time. The countdown was on. By early afternoon, the moon would begin to move across the face of the sun. After having these thoughts while lying there in bed in total darkness, Earl could only imagine what it would be like. In fact, it would be similar to the way it was now in a few hours, later in broad daylight. He then turned on a lamp to illuminate the room. Earl eventually arose from his bed, showered, and dressed. Soon he was on his way down to the hotel restaurant for coffee and breakfast. Before eating, Earl ventured out into the pier that extended from the hotel to the beach and then a short distance into the ocean. There he witnessed the sunrise from the east as he turned around to view the hotel. He realized that darkness would come again by mid-afternoon, originating from the vast area in front of him over the Pacific Ocean to the west. Yes, darkness would descend from that direction as the path of the total eclipse would make its way first over the Pacific coast of the country, then migrate eastward towards the Atlantic coast. But everything would begin in a few hours in this small Oregon coastal community of Port Orford. As the morning progressed and the light of day became brighter, Earl watched a little TV, then had a small lunch at noontime. Afterwards, he decided to go to a local market to get some snacks to munch on and a drink to sip during the great event that was by now only an hour away from starting. He took the time to do that, then returned to the lobby of the hotel and waited there for the occurrence of what now had been designated as the Great American Eclipse. It was less than an hour from beginning. Soon, it was 2:00 PM. Earl took all the precautions and decided not to go outside to view the effects of the eclipse. He wanted to avoid the temptation of looking directly at the sun beyond the period of totality, and therefore risking a chance of permanent eye damage. It was a perfect time to experience the eclipse because the sun was bright with a light blue sky and no visible clouds. Earl repeated these thoughts when he said to a lady sitting next to him in the lobby, "These are perfect conditions for the eclipse, wouldn't you say, miss?" Then she replied, "Just call me Shady," as she introduced herself and explained that she was a tourist and had been at the hotel for over a week, having come from Southern California to view the event. "Come on outside," Shady encouraged Earl, even though he was a total stranger. Then she continued, I have the glasses you need to wear in order to look directly at the sun. Earl forgot about the decision he had made not to go outside during the event. So just before the beginning of the eclipse, at Shady's insistence, he agreed to go outside to view the event with her and other guests. Meanwhile, it had already begun to get darker, much like the twilight of the late afternoon, early evening time of day. Once they were outside, Earl took the glasses that Shady offered him, put them on, and began to look up. He was amazed at what he saw. With the moon not yet covering the sun at all, with the proper eyewear from Shady, he was able to look directly at it. Amazing, he said as he stared up directly into the sun, which, through those special glasses, appeared like a tiny white ball surrounded by the blackness of space, which was actually the surrounding blue sky. Amazing, Earl said once again, as he continued to look. After he had gotten enough of the view, he handed Shady the glasses and she began to look too, looking directly at the sun. Without those special glasses, they could not have looked directly at the sun the way they did without becoming totally blinded. Try it sometimes, on a perfectly clear sunny day. It's not possible because of our human reflexes. At any rate, just prior to their leaving the deck, they viewed the vast expanse of the Pacific Ocean. It was still bright outside where the dark blue Pacific waters transitioned perfectly into the light blue sky at the horizon. Soon, it was obvious to all sharing the experience that the moon had now covered a portion of the sun. As the area around the hotel continued to get darker, that horizon, which was barely visible only moments earlier, seemed to have disappeared from view as the appearance of the water merged with the sky above it in a perfect camouflage. It continued to get darker as the eclipse progressed. From the ground, they looked directly at the sun with those special glasses. What they saw now, unlike earlier when they looked through those special glasses, was part of the sun disappearing behind the moon. As before, it was a spectacular sight. By now, however, only a portion of the sun, that little white ball as it appeared to them before, could be seen. As a result, the sun began to provide less of its light because of the encroachment of the moon into its path. The consequence was that darkness slowly began to make its way into this small coastal community. As the time progressed, the crowd assembled on the deck outside the hotel could hardly tell it was getting darker by the minute. The huge shadow caused by the eclipse slowly made its way from the Pacific Ocean onto the Oregon coast. Earl and his tourist friend resisted going back into the hotel so they could witness the maximum effect of the eclipse. Meanwhile, the crowd was waiting for a once-in-a-lifetime experience. The first noticeable change in daylight was about 20 minutes after the official start of the eclipse watch at 2 o'clock. Gradually, it began to become much darker than what it was only a few minutes earlier. Oh my, the eclipse is beginning, Earl uttered. By 2:30 in the afternoon, the sun still shined brightly, as only a portion of it was covered by the moon. Total darkness had not yet arrived. There was only a slight dimming to the early afternoon sky. Being the academic type, Earl had begun to take notes about the whole experience. The sun was still bright, and at that time he had no problem writing down information and seeing what he had written. He realized that in his location, the totality of the eclipse would not occur until 2:45, when total darkness would suddenly descend on the area. He checked his watch and it showed 2:35. He figured that as it continued to get darker at any time, now it would be too dark for him to continue writing and seeing what he had written. In his estimation, soon it would be as the night time. Earl decided to have some of the snacks that he had purchased from the convenience store earlier. He offered some to Shady as well as to others who were there on the deck with them. When he finished snacking with some of the people who were gathered there, it was almost 2:45, the time of the eclipse, the time of totality. It was about at that time when it got really dark, much darker than the evening twilight, as dark as nighttime, as he had just thought about. In fact, it was dim enough for some of the stars to be seen. The time of totality was near. Earl asked Shady for those special glasses again to see all of the sun being blocked from view by the moon. It would last only about 3 minutes, the period of totality. But wait, Earl remembered that at that time, he would need no glasses to look directly at the sun. He realized that he would be able to view it with the naked eye without causing damage to his eyes. Within a minute or two, the time of the total eclipse had arrived in Port Orford. Earl, as well as the others, continued to look at the sun, though now it was totally hidden by the moon. Again, at this point, the eclipse could be viewed safely with the naked eye, and what they saw was magnificent. The sun, now totally hidden from view by the moon in the mid-afternoon, the mid-late afternoon. Only the sun's lingering brightness was evident beyond the edges of the moon, now totally covering the sun, a situation he remembered Mr. Totler had called the solar corona back in high school. What a weird experience, but one that nature calls for on rare occasions. Although it was anticipated, everyone was amazed when total darkness descended over the area in what was a few minutes earlier a perfectly sunny afternoon. And again, it was dark enough for a few stars to be seen, as well as the planet of Venus. Someone also mentioned that a flock of birds could be seen heading south, something that would never happen during a normal sunny afternoon at that time. Not only that, but the neon signs on buildings as the community's small downtown area had suddenly become illuminated, as well as pole lighting along city streets, as though it was nighttime. Well, in fact, it was night, if only for a brief period of time during what was otherwise a sunny afternoon. Having been satisfied about their experiencing the eclipse outside, Earl and Shady decided to head back into the lobby. As they returned back inside, they decided to take another look at the sun with those special glasses. And they did just that. Now, they were satisfied with the experience and went back into the hotel lobby to experience the remainder of the total eclipse there. Yes, even there it was surreal, as the eclipse had its effect on the inside of the hotel, like it had on the outside on the deck. It would be this way for only a little while longer. Once Earl and Shady had left the deck, it was an unusual experience for them inside the hotel, as well as what was happening outside, with the lobby being illuminated with artificial light as though it was night. What was only a few minutes earlier, a sunny afternoon. Gradually, the artificial lighting gave way to the natural light provided by the sun as it reemerged from behind the moon. Soon, that whole area along the Oregon coast was out of the path of the moon's shadow. And again, it was back to normal, back to being a sunny afternoon. After it was all over, Earl realized that the experience of totality lasted for only about 3 minutes, but the entire period of darkness, because of the moon's shadow, lasted much longer, like for another 10 minutes or so. Yes, it was an experience they all would not soon forget. It gradually became bright again as the sun had reemerged from the moon's shadow. Let's take another break, and when we return, we'll finish the show. Welcome back. In Chapter 3 of the book, Miracles in the Lives of Ordinary People, the story about the eclipse was just one experience that Earl had later in his life. The main theme of the chapter would come later. That would be the fire that occurred in his own house in Forsyth, Louisiana. Nonetheless, the story of a fire that destroyed Earl's parents' house is only a small portion of his life's history that included many successful experiences. Earl's experience with the total eclipse while starting graduate school was certainly one to remember. Given that one of his favorite subjects in high school was geography, it may not have been coincidental that later in his education he experienced one of the most magnificent natural occurrences on planet Earth. How often does anyone experience a situation of a total eclipse of the sun where, because of the alignment of the heavenly bodies, the moon totally blocks out the light stemming from the sun? At that time, suddenly, what was once daylight becomes night. Yes, truly one of the world's natural wonders. And that's what Earl experienced as he began his studies in graduate school. Stay tuned for more experiences from Earl's later life when human error caused a near-fatal catastrophe at his home. Destruction by fire. Well, so much for now. Remember, whatever fire you may be going through, just keep in mind that there's always more. More good things coming your way. We'll see you the next time.